I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
It's got to 2-2 and we've still got more than half an hour to go. And here's Ozil. Lacazette.
Hello, welcome to another Touchy Gooners podcast. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Unpacked episode, yeah, from Ballied Up Leroy. How you guys all doing? It's your boy Dan Coogs. I'm joined by German Deezy. How you doing, man?
All good, man. All good. Let's get it.
Yeah, we got the carboholic with us. Sean, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm hot, bro. Very hot, man. But yeah, it's cool. All good.
And we got Dr. Leroy fresh from saving lives and Ballied Up. Yeah, how you doing? Yeah. Obviously, there's been a lot of transfer news, this, that, and the other. So we're going to come with a little bit of a special episode here and just try and dissect what we think about, you know, some of these rumours, what we think about the targets mentioned, how we think that's going to, you know, work for the team going forward. But before we get into all of that, a quick message about our sponsor. So this episode is sponsored by FanSlide, the first in-play fantasy football game that you can play out there, and they've got some special features for you, especially for the Euros. So this was a little app that I was using during the Premier League. It's very good fun to play against your mates. So it's completely free to download, and you can win cash in every single game during the Euros, right? So it's a great way of making some of these neutral matches a bit more interesting. You know, your Italy's and Slovakia's, some of these group stages are going to be a bit dead, but you know, when money's on the table, it all matters, right? So there's a £10,000 total prize pot for the Euros as well. And so if you invite your mates, there's more chance of some of you lot winning the money. So make sure you download that before the Euro starts in a couple of days, and you won't be disappointed. So guys, let's get into the nitty-gritty, right? So the way I was planning on doing this episode was, rather than go through each of the individual rumors, I think it's more important to understand, you know, what some of the profiles we think the team is looking for, the team is needing. right? And then maybe that will give us a bit more information about, you know, which rumors to believe, which ones to dismiss, which ones we can put to agent talk, which ones we can actually get invested in. So, you know, there was talk this week of Emi Buendia not being first choice, being second choice, this, that, and the other. So rather than us getting all invested into any of these rumors, let's talk about what the team needs. So I'm going to start at the back and work our way to the front, and then we'll go through what we think the club might be looking for in each of these positions in the team, and then maybe talk a bit about some of the rumours that we've been hearing about these different positions. So, you know, there has been some talk about Leno potentially wanting out. Bit of a hammer blow, I think, to the hierarchy, considering, you know, what transpired last summer between Leno and Emi Martinez. So, German Dan, I'll start with you. You know, your national compatriot there is wanting out. What do you think could be a driver behind that? And if we were to go for a new keeper, what do you think would some of the attributes we'd need to look at?
I think this season, Leonard didn't have the greatest of season. I still think he was relatively decent. I still think that how bad he was is a bit overblown, but I'm not one that wants to hold on to players who I think are good enough to play for Arsenal. I'd only want to hold on to players who I really think we need them at Arsenal. I don't think he's a necessity, to be honest. There's players you can pick up around this level. Whether I have belief if the recruitment team will do that is another thing. But yeah, I think if he wants to go, let him go. I do think that his market is a bit limited. So Dortmund just signed in a keeper who's, I think, like 22 years old. So I'm not sure they will spend enough money and another chunk of money on like Leno. I don't know where else he would go. One of the German teams I would suspect would pick him up. It wouldn't be Bayern Munich right now. I'm not sure. Maybe somewhere in Europe. I don't know. Italy. I think Italy or Germany are the most likely markets. German players like going to Italy as well. So, yeah. Let's see if there's interest for him. But we all know that the COVID market kind of makes it a bit more difficult dealing with the European teams. They don't have that much money. I would still value Leno on around 20, 25 million at least. And I struggle to see where we would get that kind of money from, you know. So, boy. Mm. And in terms of replacement, I think whatever keeper we sign, he needs to be good with his feet. Needs to be fast off his line. I think that's a major, major requirement. Because we want to play with a high line, right? So we need a keeper that is comfortable coming off his line fast. Additionally, I think the keeper needs to be able to throw the ball well. I think one of the things that I think both Leno and Martinez weren't that good at was throwing in terms of distributing the ball, like the quick throws. So I think, like, I know we ain't going to sign him, but like someone like Kalle Navas has a proper nice throw, can go over long distance and can release it quick. I think those type of things are important as well. And then obviously, as a base standard, the keeper needs to be a good shot stopper, you know. I don't want a guy and go, like, who was it, that Claudio Bravo guy at Man City? he could play football, he could do a lot, but he couldn't save a shot to save his life. So, yeah, and a good all-around keeper. I think also a major thing is claiming crosses. I think that's something that Leno didn't really have. So yeah, it'd be good if we could get a keeper that is commanding in the area. So yeah, those would be my key. Leroy is killing me with the body on.
Yeah. No, some really good points there. Sean, like, did you wanna jump in on that on the Leno conversation as well? And then what you would like, actually, would you replace Leno, given an opportunity? Would you replace him?
Yes, I would replace him, just because I feel like we need someone who is better with the ball at their feet, who commands their area a bit better. He's got a good command and a good presence about them as well. So, and yeah, and naturally, obviously, we need someone who can start attacks well. So I personally, I do like Dionana, on our rumours, so hopefully that will come to fruition. Where it is obviously, you know, a bit of cause for concern, we've not seen him in the Prem, so we don't know what he'd be like. You know, there's a lot of aerial balls that go in the Prem. Keepers get bombarded a lot. You know, keepers are not as protected as well in the Prem as well, so that would be the challenge for him if we did buy him. But I think it's, you know, whether he the ban is upheld or whether it's shortened, it's still a very, very low risk transfer. So it would be something I'd look to do regardless. Obviously, it's a bit tough because I agree with Dan. A problem we're going to have, as we're now seeing, obviously, with Xhaka, Guendouzi, we're having to sell all these guys at a discount just because COVID has decimated everybody's finances, especially in Europe. So, yeah, and I agree with Dan. I'd probably still value Leonard around 20 mil, but I just don't see us getting that money from anybody. So, I don't know. I feel like we're going to be stuck with him because realistically, who's going to pay that money? I know when we wanted him initially, Napoli had a lot of interest. I don't know if they still have that sort of interest. And, you know, so whether they'd be in for him, but Napoli are another one. I don't know if they'd be able to pay that sort of money. They did pay, obviously, a big, big fee for Osimhen last summer, but they pretty much, you know, that pretty much took away their whole transfer budget. So I don't know how much they'd be willing to spend. So, yeah, I agree with Dan. I think it'd be tough to get a buyer for Leno in this market because I just realistically, I don't know where he's going to go to.
I think one thing that I found quite interesting is I think there's talk about, you know, extending Guendouzi's or exercising the option to extend Guendouzi's contract. And I think they, both him and Leno Torreira, they all signed in the same summer. So it may be the case that, you know, we've got that option to extend Leno's contract for another year. Because I know he's got 2 years left, so it might be the case that, you know, we just firm it for another year, potentially exercise an option to extend his contract, and then maybe next summer is the time that we look to offload him. Because I guess my main concern with that whole goalkeeping situation is that, you know, there's a lot of work to be done in this team, so I don't know if these men have the bandwidth to actually get a replacement number one. Potentially a number two. We don't have a number two at the moment either because that Renison guy is not it. Plus all the other positions that we need as well, you know. So so I probably would keep Leno. I think if you get a more solid defence in front of him, we can afford to keep him another year. Like for all of his, you know, mistakes and whatnot that people have been bringing up, I do think he was probably a standout keeper in his first 2 years at the club, and this year probably being a weaker one. But even with him, you know, sort of being a bit shaky this year, I think our defensive record did improve, you know, conceding 11 less goals than last year. So I don't think he's too much of an issue. So, Leroy, I guess my question for you before we move on to the defence is, you know, what, if anything, have you seen of this Onana guy? Is that a deal that you would potentially pursue? And if not him, what attributes would you like to see in the keeper, as we asked Dan earlier?
So I'm going to confess, I'm not the best person at looking at keepers. I'm not really well versed in how to assess a keeper's quality like that. All I've seen is video of him and clips. Hey, look at Cook smiling because someone commented in his trim.
He's
smiling. Well, I saw his teeth, bro. Anyway, I'm not really. All I've seen is clips, and from what I've seen his clips, he looks an absolute madness with his feet. And I feel that the way we want to play in terms of build up with our keeper being the 11th outfielder, I feel that that will be important. So that is definitely the type of profile of keeper I want. I can't really attest to his goalkeeping skills, such as his ball handling, his ability from crosses, because that's so important in the Prem, and other factors. But that's the profile of keeper we should be going for. Whether he's the one in terms of quality, I don't know. But at the prices I'm seeing quoted, you can't really go wrong. It's definitely worth a gamble for me.
Yeah, I hear that. And I think they said that his court case or something is going to be, the outcome is going to be heard this week, right? So, you know, hopefully we'll get an update on that soon. Because, yeah, if they're talking about, you know, under 10 million euro, I'd firm it, you know. And even if that means that, you know, he's not going to play till Feb, that's potentially a top class keeper that you're getting for very cheap. So definitely one to watch. So I guess if we move on to the defence now, I guess there's lots of positions that we can talk about. But let's start in the centre of the park. You know, David Luiz, I think, had quite a good season this year. Made up for his atrocious season last year. I think he gave away 5 penalties, but I think this season he was very solid. And not just defensively, I think he was very crucial to our build-up and being able to, you know, sort of play the ball out of the defence and really pin teams back. And I think we definitely missed him at several points during the season when he was injured. Thinking back to early in the season when he went off against Leicester, I think he was probably our most potent form of attack in that match. We ended up losing 1-0. And then towards the end of the season, his injury, which meant that, you know, he couldn't play in the Europa League semi-final, meant that we're playing Rob Holding. And I think we lost a lot with his build-up. So I know we've got a guy that I think most of us on this pod, if not all of us on this pod, are very invested in William Saliba, who's supposedly going to come back into the pre-season and fight for his place. So, Lira, I'll start with you. How are you feeling about this Saliba reintegration? And do you think that he fits the profile of centre-back that, you know, Arteta will want or will need trying to play his type of football?
So it's a yes and no answer for me. So yes, in terms of I feel that Arteta wants to compress the pitch and I feel like he wants to play with a high line. In that essence, I think Saliba is a really good defender to play in that system. He's got the athleticism. He's not the fastest, but he's fast enough. And he's obviously got the size and the agility, etc., and a 1v1 ability to play in an expansive team that's going to play a high line. But contrary to that, he also isn't really a front-footed defender. He's a defender who trusts his athleticism and who trusts his ability 1v1 and reads the game. So you notice, especially when he played for Nice this season, and when he played for St. Etienne last season, his first move is to drop off. Anything he doesn't know what happens, he drops off and gives himself space to assess the situation. Unlike Gabriel, his first move is to press just so he doesn't get turned or anything like that. So number one, I feel he'd be a really good defensive partner for Gabriel. But number two, I feel like he'd be really good in that system just because he's such an all-rounder in terms of his ability and athleticism. Now, the no part comes from, in my opinion, his ball playing. And I often see it online where he's referred to as a ball-playing centre-back. I feel like he's really comfortable with the ball at his feet, so he's pretty press-resistant for a defender, and he's really decent at sort of bringing the ball out from the back, not dribbling past people, but moving with the ball in a sort of like, not dribbling, but carrying it, basically. But I don't think his passing's very good, and I feel like it's overstated. Now, he'll hit a few diags like anyone can. I mean, get me on the pitch, I'll hit a few diags. I mean, you know, it's not difficult, but he'll hit a few diags, but I don't feel that he's got the kind of range and the line-breaking passing that Arteta would ideally want. And it really showed that we struggled without that when, even though I'm not Luiz's biggest fan, when Luiz was out of the team, it really, really hindered our attack because it felt like we couldn't create because we couldn't really break that line. And I feel that that's actually quite an important part of what Arteta wants to do from the back. So I don't think he'll be ideal on the ball, but off the ball and from a defensive perspective, I think he will be ideal, but Arteta clearly doesn't trust him.
It was funny, Lira, that you're describing a lot of things that I was ascertaining towards a certain person, but like I'll let Denkuk take over again.
Oh, no, I want to hear because that sounds
my exact assessment of the centre-backs is that we have two centre-backs that are right, two centre-backs that are don't right. I don't view Chambers as a centre-back, so we have four centre-backs. I would then look at it and say, I know Arteta wants to find the centre-back that passes well and is more senior than both Saliba and Gabriel. That is clear for me that he wants someone that's played more games than both of them and is also better than on the ball than both of them. But because I'm so invested in them, I think the best short to mid-term solution for this is selling, holding, having Gabriel and Pablo Mari as the left-sided backup and bringing in a more senior centre-back on the free and cheaper deal for 2 years. And that centre-back will be Jerome Boateng. This is a good solution, in my opinion, because I know we like being, would you say, snobby. The Touchagunas are extremely snobby, yeah? Always narrow to this play. He's not drippy enough. But Boateng is one drippy. He's also very, very experienced. This is a guy, like, if you compare it, yeah, Chelsea signed Thiago Silva at 35, 36. Boateng, when they were both in their prime, was a far, far better player than him. That is no debate about it. Boateng was one of the best defenders in the world, hands down. And he was winning things at Bayern Munich, winning things at Germany, going deep into tournaments for Bayern Munich, going deep into tournaments for Germany. This is by no means a guy that is, for me, in my opinion, finished. As we see, there's a lot of players that people say they're finished, but they're not really finished yet. They just need a few more games to get back into their strides, which was the same with David Luiz this year. He showed that he actually wasn't finished. He was just struggling with injuries in the end. But Gareth Bale even didn't look finished. Suarez didn't look finished. I bet you next year Aguero is going to bang at Barcelona. He's not finished. And I look at Boateng as a player that on a two-year deal, I'm definitely taking him because I think it is a better pathway for Saliba and Gabriel to, in the long term, be the main two centre-backs than having to potentially buy someone who they then compete with. And then I can easily see that one of the two is not going to be happy with it and can leave. And I'm looking at Saliba predominantly here. He has not played a game for Arsenal yet. And we're already looking at other centre-backs because there are certain things that he does really, really well. But what Arteta, on the fundamental level, wants, he doesn't quite have yet. So Arteta's going to go out there and try to find that. And he views Holding as a more senior centre-back than him. So I think he's still going to prefer Holding. I'm trying to find a solution for this. And then in the short and midterm, still have Saliba and still find the skills that Arteta wants. And that, for me, is in the easiest one. It's just Boateng. For 2 years, that's calm. He's, what, 33? That's not finished, in my opinion.
Sorry, I'm just going to pick up some anti-sickness from my car. Because I'm so just give me 5 minutes, 2 seconds.
I need to know what would you do in this situation? Because realistically, we know Arteta's looking for something here. He's going to do something here.
So I've got a few points on this, and I think both Leroy and Dan have raised some interesting points, and I totally take into account, you know, Arteta, when he came in, obviously he's got his vision, and we've all mentioned that he wants to compress the pitch, he wants to play a high line. So, but first and foremost, you've invested in Gabriel. So if he didn't have what you thought you needed or what you think is necessary, then that raises the question as to why you bought him. But even going past that, I think that's still something which can be developed, because both him and Saliba, in defender terms, they're still both babies. So I think technically, I think they can both improve. I think there's room for improvement. I think there's scope for improvement. I think, you know, I don't think they're awful, like, you know, on the ball, but, you know, there's room for improvement. So I wouldn't necessarily rule that out. And, you know, when we talk about Arteta, one of the things that he was lauded about was for his improvement in players. Do you know what I mean? So people have to remember that Arteta's not working at City. He's not going to have a blank checkbook. So, you know, these are the sort of intermediate sort of offerings that you have to make to, you know, improve with what you have, because the only way we're not going to be able to close the gap on the teams above us by, you know, recruiting more. You've already seen with Joss, we're not going to be able to spend more than anybody. So it's about smart sales, good coaching and overperforming our talent level. So I think he needs to work with what he has a bit more. And obviously, I also attribute the same to Saliba. I think he can improve. I think he can, you know, there are different ways to progress. So, you know, when we talk about our progressors, we talk about, you know, David Luiz, Xhaka, but you don't, now they're both going, you don't need, this gives you an opportunity to change how you structure the build-up. You know, you could maybe change the shape, drop another, to a 4-3-3, drop someone in between Saliba and Gabriel to have that, to progress that way. You know, it's not always, you know, you don't always need someone to be dropping diags or balls over the top, even though that's helpful. You can have people bring the ball forward, you know, to, you know, escape the first line of pressure. So I think there's different ways to progress. I don't think we need to be bogged down 100% in having a big line breaker in terms of the passes they pick. That would be helpful. But at the end of the day, I think we need to work with what we have. We've got so many positions that we need to improve on. I just think we need to just bog down and start investing. Like, if, for example, if you go out and buy for it, just namesake the two we've been linked to heavily, Tapsoba or Koundé, that you're pretty much writing off the end of Saliba's career, essentially. You are, because if you're... both of them are costing minimum 50, yeah? So Saliba's not going to play. And one thing for me, I mentioned earlier, the most important thing for young players is to play. They're only going to develop by playing. So I really don't think you should be putting blocks in their place to play, you know. And if someone came back to me and was like, yeah, two young centre-backs, it's not ready for a title challenge. And I was like, but we're not challenging for the title. All we're doing is trying to get back into the top four. We're playing one game a week. So I think we really just need to put our stocks in both of these, develop them. Obviously, they're going to have errors and bad games along the line, but I think the quickest way to do it is by exposing them, like we did with ESR and Saka. And I think we'd be surprised by how quickly they can develop. So, yeah, for me, I think they can both grow into being what Arteta wants. So, and that would be that would still be my solution. A bit biased, obviously, because I really like Saliba, but I just think at the end of the day, like, he's going into year three of a 5-year contract now. If you don't play him now, when are you going to play him? And what incentive does he have to sign a new contract? Do you know what I mean? So if we don't start prioritising his development now, I'm pretty sure he's just going to ask to leave.
Yeah, I think you all made some really good points there about the defensive situation. I think it's interesting, you know, Leroy, to hear you say, you know, you don't think Saliba's got the on-the-ball qualities, because from when I watch him, I think he's more accomplished on the ball than someone like Gabriel, personally. You know, I think he's better, you know, sort of bringing the ball out. And I think he's better, not necessarily with the line-breaking passes, but just in terms of finding his teammates with regularity, I think Saliba is quite good at that. And so, you know, just looking at, obviously, these Touchy Gooners, they all know that we love the statistics, right? So just looking at FB Ref, you know, in terms of passes attempted and pass completion, I think Saliba's in the 90th and 94th percentile for both of those across the top five leagues per 90. And progressive passes, progressive carries, he's in 87th and the 92nd percentile for those respectively. And then in terms of dribbles completed, he's in the 85th percentile. So, you know, I think listening to, was it a Twitter Spaces the other day? I think someone close to the training ground, close to some people at training ground, was saying that Saliba was even trying to do too much stuff on the ball to really try and impress early on in his career, and that didn't seem to go down well. So for me, I think this is a big it's a big coaching point, you know, and a big coaching question mark on Arteta. And I feel like if, you know, the club has anything about them, they would sit him down and say, you know what, we need this to work. You know, we've spent £60 million on two centre backs. We've just let David Luiz go. We've given Holding a new contract. We signed Pablo Mari at your behest as well. You know, you need to make it work with the pieces that we have, because, you know, some of the names that I'm seeing being linked, you know, Ben White, Tapsoba, Jules Koundé, this, that and the other. And I'm just thinking, you know what, if you're going to go for another young-ish centre-back, what's wrong with the guy that we have at the moment? You know, this guy clearly has attributes that you can use. Coach him, make him a better player and use him, you know?
Do you know what? No, so I think you might have misunderstood what I was saying. So I did say he's very good with the ball at his feet. So that includes press resistance and carrying the ball. So he's a very good carrier of the ball from centre-back, and he looks very smooth with it. When it's at his feet, it's not a problem. And I'm not saying he's a bad passer. That's not what I'm saying at all. And he can find his teammate. What I'm saying is there's passers from centre-back who are competent, and there's playmaking centre-backs, which is like David Luiz. And they're two different levels. And what I'm saying is a lot of people are referring to Saliba as the latter, which is like a ball-playing centre-back, which I do not think he is. I think he's competent. He's decent on the ball in terms of his... He's very good on the ball in terms of his dribbling and when it's at his feet. He's a decent passer, but he's not a playmaking centre-back.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Like the David Luiz's are. And that's the difference. And people are referring him to as that. And I think that's an error. So that's what I was saying, just to clarify.
Yeah. Fair points. And I think we all agree basically that, you know, we don't really want us to see the clubs spend 50, 60 M's on a centre back this season. Because the mad thing is, every single one that we're linked with is costing 50 M's or more. You know, it's not, you know, a 20 million pound here, 30 million pound here, not even a free transfer, which is what I find very worrying, because for me, that says that, you know, this guy is going to be a muck.
Credit Karma has always been there to help you make better financial decisions. And now they want to help you even more. With a Credit Karma Money Spend account, you can be rewarded for good money habits. Credit Karma Money is a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. Just pay with your debit card, and if you win, you'll be notified on the spot and your Instant Karma cash will be added back to your spend account. Open your FDIC-insured spend account for free. There's no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, and free withdrawals from a network of over 50,000 ATMs. And when you make a purchase between June 8th and June 30th, you'll automatically be entered to win $1 million. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Instant Karma is sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase necessary. Exclusions and terms apply. See rules. Banking services provided by MVB Bank Incorporated. Member FDIC. Maximum balance and transfer limits apply.
One of our marquee signings in a position that I personally don't think is of particular need. So, you know, another one to wait and see, because I think from early, David Ornstein and all of these other people were saying that, you know, right centre back is a priority position. And that's from, you know, sort of January, February time. So, it definitely looks like the goal is to sign a right centre back. So, you know, whether or not that means, you know, the end of Saliba's Arsenal career remains to be seen. But it does look, I think, worrying.
I just want to say on, a few more things on centre back. So, because I really agree with what both Shion said about trying to make the talents work. But I'm trying to, and the reason I suggest Boateng is because I'm looking at it from a lens of what is Arteta going to do or is trying to do. And I think we've seen now for 18 months what kind of manager and person he is. So I think the signs don't point towards him using both of them together. And so I'm looking for like the best solution that I don't think it's going to happen anyway. I think we're probably going to be spending some money at centre back. But yeah, I guess I think this is the last position we should be recruiting for this summer, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I agree generally. I was just saying what I think should happen. But yeah, I mean, if we look at it from Arteta's lens, pretty much like I've had doubts for the last 6 months. I think we're going to buy centre-back and I don't think Saliba's going to be used, if I'm to be totally, totally honest with you. I feel like the rumours are just too strong. Do you know what I mean? And like you said, once you spend 50, 60 mil on a centre-back, that's your first choice centre-back. Do you know what I mean? So I just think... Whenever I've heard Arteta speak about Saliba, it's never been anything that's been overly promising or, you know, fills me with confidence. So, yeah, I expect us to spend 50, 60 mil, which I think is worrying because, you know, we are a team that scored 55 goals last season. There's a bigger issue further up the pitch. So if they're spending 50, 60 mil on a centre-back, I'd like to hope they're spending another 60 to 100 mil, you know, on midfielders and attackers as well. So, let's see.
Yeah, so moving on to, I guess let's do the next one very quickly, right? Let's talk about left-back situation. So I think it's been well-reported, well-documented that we've been in the market for a backup left-back to Kieran Tierney. Leroy, I start with you here again. So obviously, you know, Kieran Tierney's been spoken about as being injury-prone, this, that and the other. So what do you think... firstly, do you think that those, you know, sort of assertions are accurate when you know, judging this guy's fitness record? And then, given his fitness record, what do you think would be the best type of solution for competition or backup to Tierney?
It's a really difficult one. I think the jury's still out for me in terms of the injury-prone comments. Now, I know he's had a lot of injuries, yes, but I'm trying to look at the context of those injuries. So he was overplayed, obviously, at Celtic, which we saw. And his injury was clearly an overused type of injury. So I feel that it's a bit unfair to call that injury prone. Now, obviously, he's a relatively young age and he's been playing a lot of football. And then he's moved to a new league with a completely different level of intensity. But he's come injured anyway. So he was injured beforehand. Now, what we've got to look at his other injuries. What, he dislocated his shoulder or something like that. That's a bit bad luck. I wouldn't really call that injury prone. And then the one at the end of the season, he got clattered by a shit challenge, which is an impact injury anyway. So I'm not really convinced that this injury-prone tag really sticks. I would love to see it now he's had some acclimatization at this level of intensity and without any stupid collision injuries, and to see how many games we can get out of him, particularly with no Europe as well. Now, in terms of the kind of left-back we need to kind of sign, I'm not fussed. Whether it's an older left-back, I wouldn't even mind a younger left-back. But what I was saying is, I wouldn't get someone who is like a young Fennel, for example, because I feel that exactly as someone said earlier, these players need to play. If you're getting a young Fennel and you're going to stick him behind Tierney and he's not going to get significant minutes or build a rhythm in his game and play significant with significant consistency, I don't see the point in doing that. I'd sign that young Fennel if there was one and I'd loan him out and then get another one, but I'm happy with any competent, steady Eddie, good pro at left back to do a job behind Tierney, personally. And to be honest, if someone's going to be thrown in and out, if he does get injured, has to come on. If he's got to be thrown in and out of games, like random games with no rhythm, I would probably like someone with a good degree of experience, because if you get an 18-year-old and you use them like that, they're going to make mistakes and it's not going to help their development whatsoever.
Yeah, fair play. Sharon or Dan, do you have anything that you want to add to the left back discussion?
I think I agree with Leroy.
I pretty much agree with Leroy. I just think it's not a high priority position. We're playing one game a week next season, so I sort of agree with Leroy. Like, with a week to recover between games, like, you'd expect that just as a whole, we wouldn't encounter that many injuries. You know, we've got a big rest period in between games. And obviously, this is a wider point about the squad. Like, I'd like a bit of continuity in the team next season. So, World Cup games, maybe we'll take one of the League Cup or FA Cup seriously. But just for the league, I want to see some continuity in the cups. You don't have to take it seriously. The main focus should be on trying to get back into the top four. So, I think, yeah, assuming like we're only going to play one game a week and Tierney won't play cup games, I don't think we need, like, as long as they're steady, like, and they're not, because I agree with you, I don't think a young left back is going to develop playing behind Kieran Tierney next season when we're playing one game a week. I just don't think that's good use of him, and it's not a smart investment. So yeah, someone competent, someone decent who's happy to be back up and who's not on massive wages, not too fussed.
And I think also that we should probably expect Tierney, hopefully, this is not too much to ask for, to get at least like 30 games in the Premier League. So there's not many games for that backup left back in the Premier League at all. So yeah, some cheap solution, I beg.
Fair play. And then I guess right back.
Can I say one more thing? I don't want someone who's completely dusted, like no Cedrics.
Yeah. No, for real. Because I think, yeah, moving on to Cedric, we're in a position now where we've got four right-backs in the squad. Chambers, Bellerin, Cedric, and Ainsley Maitland-Niles, right? So Cedric pretty much passed March. I think it was a mistake against, was it Slavia Prague or something in the last minute?
Yeah, that's Slavia Prague.
We basically haven't seen him since, Bellerin was dropped for a number of games in 2021.
Bellerin's been gone, bro.
Yeah, so Chambers, I think he made 16 appearances despite not featuring at all in the first half. Maitland-Niles got gulagged, sent to the gulag by Arteta early on, you know, convinced him to stay, bigged him up in the media. As soon as that transfer window closed, we didn't see Maitland-Niles again for a few months. I think got thrown in a few Europa League games here and there, played left back when Tierney got injured in January. And then that was the last time we saw him. It was a disaster class against Crystal Palace, but you know, then we didn't see him again. So essentially, three of these four right backs can be considered to be out of favour by this manager. I think there's been big talk about Bellerin leaving. Chambers potentially getting a new contract. And Maitland-Niles, I think, was saying in the Telegraph yesterday, you know, he wants some clarity about his role. And Cedric just seems like he's happy to be here. You know, he's just running around. So it's very interesting to see what we do this summer and what type of profile of right back you think we'll be after. So, Sheldon, I'll go with you here first. What do you think is the ideal right back for Arteta's system?
I think we need an all-purpose weather right back because, you know, sometimes in games the right back inverts and he's played in a line with the centre mids. So, you know, to help protect against transitions, but also as another option in build-up. But sometimes he overlaps. And we've seen pretty much Chambers perform both of those roles since he's been in the team. You know, some games he's tucking in, but, you know, some games we've seen him get forward and overlap a lot, like, you know, the West Ham game as well. So so I think it just really needs to be a more advanced version of that. You know, someone who, who can sort of contribute in all phases, who isn't technically limited. Who isn't technically limited like Bellerin is, but who also has that level of athleticism, you know, that can get up and down like Tierney does very seamlessly. So I've seen, obviously, a few different guys. I like Gabriel Menino and Riddle Baku. Those are the two that I've sort of, you know, that look like sort of all-purpose weather fullbacks that can, you know, come inside, play inside if necessary, but also can hug the touchline. So sort of performs, you know, Arteta often talks about the specificity that he wants. So, you know, depending on each game. So I feel like they would sort of fit his requirements because from one thing I will say from Arteta, what I've seen so far, he likes multifaceted players, which explains why he likes ESR and Saka a lot, because they can just perform a variety of roles to a very, very good level. And obviously that's quite telling considering they're the youngest players, but I think that's what he will be looking for. You know, someone who can play inside, but someone who can overlap. And funnily enough, when he first came in, it was Ainsley who got the nod initially, you know, as someone who was playing inside. And then you could also go outside as well. But obviously Ainsley, as he's always been, has been very, very inconsistent, hasn't been very, very serious. So it's obviously very much so that he's fallen out of favour with Arteta. So, and you know, with Cedric, it's weird. That one annoys me because, you know, Arteta went very, very big on Cedric when he bought him. He spoke about how he was the best fullback he had in the final third. I said he had great delivery, how he could play left back and right back. But, you know, when it came to the crunch games against Villarreal, Cedric was nowhere to be seen. And then we moved Xhaka out to left back. So, yeah, I just... And that one was a waste because we've given him a four-year contract on £75,000 a week. So that's a big, big waste of money again. So, I just hope they're smart with their recruitment and, you know, have someone who's multifaceted, who can do a variety of roles to a very high level.
Fair play. And I know, Dan, you've been watching Ridley Baku very closely, you know, that under-21 tournament and during the season as well for Wolfsburg. So you're very high on him. So is he your number one target? And do you have any other right backs in mind when you're thinking about what we can potentially do this summer?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So for me, Ridley Baku, I've been watching them for a bit now, and even before the tournament and the group, I said this might be the guy for right back. You know, I think long term he'll probably be the Germany right back as well. He's enjoyed a very good season with Wolfsburg, finished fourth, so they're going for the Champions League qualification. Very likely to play Champions League football next year. I think this summer is the chance to get him for a reasonable price. I think price of the brick is going up next summer if he plays Champions League football. If he's playing for the German national team by next summer, that price is just going to be bigger. I don't know how well Wolfsburg are going to do in the league next season. They might not even get Champions League again, so that might help us in our pursuit next year. But I really would stress that given the situation we have at right back right now, with three out of four right backs at our favour, and Chambers being a makeshift right back, really, even though he's competent there, I would say right back is 100% a position where we have the opportunity to upgrade and we should take this opportunity. I think I saw some numbers floating around 15 mil. I don't think it's going to be that cheap, to be honest. I said on Twitter the other day, Wolfsburg are rich. They're one of the few German teams who are backed by a corporation. So they're owned by the Volkswagen Group. They don't need money, man. The whole city is just basically feeding the Volkswagen machine. They have money. They have Champions League football. But I think that Germans are always reasonable when it comes to business. So you could price them away, but it would be a negotiation. I don't think it'd be straightforward. And for me, I think looking at Baku, I think he has a lot of positives. So going forward, he's very, very good. He attempts a lot of sort of, you'd say, passes down the channel very early to release his winger. And I think a lot of I shared a screenshot in the group chat just then that, for example, his pass completion is not that high and his passes attempted is not that high. I think that's very much down to the way Wolfsburg play. It's a ping-pong game. You guys, if you watch the Bundesliga, it's very transition-based. It's high risk, high reward, and that's how they play. And he very thrives in this kind of environment as well. I do think he is also capable of being a bit more measured. So I've seen him play in midfield. So before Wolfsburg, he was playing for Mainz. He's actually a midfielder. He's very good on his left foot as well. So he can come in on his left and shoot on his left, can cross on his left as well. I think trademark for him are overlaps, long sort of ground passes and behind the left back foot to release the winger early. And I think he's also good, quite good physically. He has a good engine. I don't think he's super, super, super fast, but I think he's got the right physicality to shift it and then still cross. So I think he has a lot of good things. And I also feel like that he could improve a lot. I think this is a player that can really make it the right side his, and similar way that Tierney's already there, right? Tierney makes the left side his own. So I think Baku has the potential to. So that would be my top choice. And then as a set, he does play. He plays on a wing as well. So I think half of the season he played as a winger for Wolfsburg, the other half as a fullback. So he's capable of playing both. He's capable of playing midfield. I saw on Twitter the other day, someone said he's the German Saka. Not quite, but he does play in a lot of positions. I wouldn't be surprised if he could play left back, you know. So he's quite a versatile player, a good player for sure. And yeah, the other fullback I would look at, but I wouldn't really want to go into secondary targets, but I do like Brandon Soppy at Rennes. He's not as technical, but very physical. And I think, again, someone that is capable of a lot of high intensity sprints. And I think the fullbacks need to be able to do a lot of these sprints up and down to really stretch the pitch offensively, and then also be able to recover, of course, when they need to. So yeah, those would be my choices.
Fair play. And then last word for you, Leroy. So like, would you be happy if we went into the season, I guess, with a new right back? And then how would you feel about Callum Chambers as a potential backup as well?
Again, especially in a season with no Europe, if we've got a new, I'm really focused on the first 11. Backups, not really that fussed about. I'm not really fussed about depth. I'm more concerned about getting the maximum quality in at the first 11. If we're going to have depth anywhere, looking at depth in the attacking end, depth in creativity and depth in goal scoring, that's where I would want my depth, if anything. So Cannon Chambers back at right back, don't care. Fine. It's the first choice right back is quality. I'm happy.
Fair play. And then I guess let's move into midfield. I'll do the midfield. I'm not including tens, right, in the midfield. I think that's more closely linked to the attack. But let's talk about central mid, and on the basis that we're either going to be playing a 4-2-3-1, so I'm talking about the two that sit, or a 4-3-3, and I'm talking about the two that play alongside a lone six, let's say, right? So for those positions, it looks like Granit Xhaka is off. All roads are leading to a link-up with Mourinho at Roma, who are doing some weird sort of wife swap type deal with Tottenham, swapping managers for a season and seeing what's happening there. And Ceballos has, you know, got back to Madrid. He didn't waste any time. I think that the day after the season ended, he was on a flight And then there's obviously Willock as well, who's ended the season in fantastic form. Player of the month for May, you know. Price of the brick gone up, right? So we've definitely got some different options, and something is definitely probably, I think, the part of the team that needs the most work from that perspective. So in terms of midfield, what do you guys think that this team needs, and what do you think Arteta wants from his midfielders? I'll start with you, German, then.
So I think what Arteta wants from his midfielders is to have two midfielders who are able to pass the ball at a high volume. So a lot of passes, a lot of regularity in their passes. He doesn't want those midfielders to go ahead of the ball. So he wants them to stay centrally, control the game, cover in the wide areas for on the left side, Tini, if he goes up. On the right side, if the fullback goes up. So at the moment, we haven't really utilized the inverted fullback that much. The fullback does go high up. So he wants them to cover wide for the fullbacks and be, I'd say, in some aspect, risk-averse in their play. Not necessarily their passing. So Partey interprets the game a little bit different to Xhaka. So Partey will play some of these passes between the lines with higher frequency, whereas Xhaka is a bit more measured. And some, like, I think, out of 10 passes, I would say, he's playing seven sideways, maybe two he's playing forward and one he's thinking about, you know. So whereas Partey is more of a 50-50 thing. So so that I think he wants them to be risk averse in their play and just control the game. And yeah, that's what he wants them to do. So I think he's not looking for a central midfielder that goes beyond the ball or beyond the attacking five that we have. And he also wants those midfielders to be robust. I think he likes the players of a certain sort of height, certain sort of physical build. If you look at all the pros that we link with, those are all, I would say, men and bigger than Torreira. So, and Guendouzi as well. So I think that's what he's looking for. He's looking for men to play midfield and be responsible and not too risky. That's what he wants, I think.
Sharon, Leroy, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I feel like eventually we might, our Arsenal fans might end up being disappointed because there is a bit of a disconnect in terms of what we think we need and you know, what Arteta might want. So one thing which is obviously very important to note is that I think Xhaka leaving is being pushed by him. So I think if he wanted to stay, Arteta would be happy to keep him. So I think Arteta is obviously very keen to replicate those qualities. And I think, in my opinion, even though I'm not a fan of his, I think that's probably where these Ruben Neves links are hotting up now. You know, a guy who is, like you said, a deeper sitter who plays, you know, in the same line with his other centre mid and is looking to progress. In terms of, I'm trying not to be too harsh on him because obviously Wolves are a very, very reactive team. You know, they're playing a very low block 3-4-3. So, and Neves is you know, his main focus is to release the wing backs or, you know, Podence or Neto through. So he hits a lot of long diags. So I don't see a lot of progressive stuff. So I went back and took a look at, you know, some of the stuff when he was at Porto, but I wasn't impressed by it either. So it's interesting because I personally, from what I've seen, I'm not even more... I'd prefer Xhaka. I have to be totally honest with you. I prefer Xhaka to him. So I'm not overly infused by that because I think we need another layer of athleticism next to Partey. And that's why I'm quite heavy on, you know, pushing through by prayer, the Bissouma links as well, isn't it? So I think that's what we need. A player who's not always, obviously, he's not as much of a high volume passer as Xhaka is, but you know, he can progress via dribbling. He covers ground at a ridiculous rate of knot. So that sort of approach will allow us to, you know, take that sort of Liverpool approach where, because we have so many, you know, we're up in that athleticism level, we can station the line higher, compress the pitch, squeeze it more. So really force it into a physical race as well. So if teams really want to go past us, they have to go over the top. And it was interesting, Dan made that point about, and I didn't even notice that before, you know, a lot of the centre mids we've been linked to, they are all quite big and physical, which is, you know, probably a bit of a difference to what we've been used to. You know, when you look at Bissouma, very big. Burge, very big. Lokonga looks like another sizable guy as well. So there is a profile, a prototype that it looks like we are keen on. Arteta does like Dan said, his centre mids to play behind the ball most of the time. They're just tasked with keeping the flow of the game going, ball progression. And if obviously it does break down, they're channeling wide to cut out transitions as well. So, I think it's a hybrid of, you know, a ball progressor, but hopefully with a good layer of athleticism as well. Maybe that's me just, you know, trying to pray that into existence, you know, getting another athlete in the midfield. But I think that's really what we need so as well. So I can understand to an extent the Neves stuff, even though I don't agree with it, but I can see why he wants it, because I think Arteta is going to try and replicate Xhaka's qualities when he goes to Roma.
And I just want to add to that, you know, I think the thing is that what Xhaka brings to midfield, cool. There are a lot of things that he can't bring, though. And you could find a player that doesn't necessarily have the high volume of his passing, but brings a lot of other layers to the game. And I think Sean already kind of sort of touched on it. And that is Bissouma. Like, for me, I look at him as a player that doesn't play 90 passes a game. Probably plays about 50 right now at Brighton. I don't know the number. I would have to check it. But I think he could play 70. Like, if just by playing for our Arsenal, he could play 70. Still a deficit to what Xhaka is playing. But he also brings you the abilities then very high up the pitch, win the ball very effectively, under pressure, still keeping the ball better than Xhaka. So the deficits that we have with some of these players, like Ruben Neves, and I think Ruben Neves is a bit better than Xhaka under pressure, is that when these players get pressed, and the way I think Arteta kind of views football is like, we're controlling it, so we are in charge. But the Premier League is hectic and the games change. So that's why we have some periods where we completely control it and then it changes and we don't have an answer, because the players in midfield don't have enough facets to their game. We need players with more facets and not just focused on exactly what Arteta wants to do. They need to be more balanced and they need to have a wider range of skill, high-level skills. And I think Lokonga kind of fits that for me as well. Bissouma fits that for me. I think Ruben Neves doesn't really fit that for me. He'll be another one where we at some point will say, we like this, we like that, we like this, we like that. So, and you might say that about Bissouma, he doesn't pass enough, but he brings so many other things that we don't have unless Partey is playing like out of the skin, like an octopus. So yeah. Having both of them together, you know, you've got to look at the added-on effect as well. Like, you're going to play, wherever you sign, you're playing them with Partey. How much does he complement Partey? You know, what Partey does well, does that person does that well as well? Because what Partey does well, you don't find many midfielders that do that well to that level. So,
Sorry, just to jump back on before Leroy comes in. I also think that's an interesting point because, you know, I think Partey can be a very, very high volume passer as well. Do you know what I mean? When he's focused on his game as well. So, and I think Dan's point to the fact that, you know, it's important to have players who are multifaceted, who can do more than one good thing. You know, like when we talk about Xhaka, we talk about his passing from deep. Cool. That's all well and good. But that's him under no pressure on his left foot when he has a lot of time. You know, when we talk about, when we think back to, you know, what the Invincibles were like as well, they didn't really have deep progressors. Do you know what I mean? I mean, Petit could do it at a time, but we had loads of athletes in that middle. Do you know what I mean? And there are different ways to boss games. So I think people get too bogged down in having deep progressing passing. And Arsenal used to walk all over teams in a manner of different ways as well. So I just think we need to be diverse and look to, you know, channel as many progressive routes as possible. And it doesn't just need to be via the deep, by deep progresses. You can have deep passes in loads of different positions. Like when you look at Robertson and Trent at Liverpool, you look at Van Dijk as well, and they use their midfielders as athletes, as shuttlers to get across, cut out the wide spaces, but also they pretty much block off the middle. So no one can ever get through Liverpool through the middle. Do you know what I mean? You've got to go over the top or target the space in between the fullbacks and the centre-backs as well. So yeah, I that's what I said. I think Xhaka going opens up a range of different possibilities for us to line up. And I would hope that that's what Arteta's looking at rather than looking to replicate more of the same with a Xhaka replacement.
Yeah, well said.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a big opportunity, right? Because I think what we've seen this season is that when Xhaka plays, the game runs through him, right? He's the dominant centre midfielder on the pitch, as far as I'm concerned. I think there's been a couple of games where Partey has stood out, but I think most of them have come alongside Elneny more than alongside Xhaka. I think there's been games where Partey has played really well, but and I think I'm thinking maybe the West Ham game is probably the only one alongside Xhaka where people are like, yeah, Partey really, you know, stamped his authority on that game when he was playing alongside Xhaka anyway. So I do think that it gives us an opportunity to sort of change who the leaders are on that pitch with players, I guess, as Dan mentioned, who are more multifaceted. Because I guess for me, the main thing that I want to see in a central midfielder is mobility and being able to cover ground quickly and win duels, right? So I don't think Xhaka was too bad in duels. I think he's quite good in the air, but what he lacked was the ability, I think, to tackle from all angles. You know, when you see Xhaka in open space, he dangles a leg and he commits a lot of fouls in those positions. So I feel like now is a chance to upgrade into a more modern midfield, you know. And it's weird saying a more modern midfield, because I think this actually is a midfield of old that we used to see under Arsene Wenger, you know, that the blueprint was you're 6 foot plus, you can cover the ground, you can win your duels, and you got some solid technique. I don't think everyone in that centre midfield from sort of 1997 to 2004 was the best of passers. But because they won their duels, they had the space, they could pick people out. And I think first and foremost, that's where we've sort of come undone in recent years. Is if you look at the centre mids that we've had, you know, Xhaka, Ceballos, Elneny, and going back, Guendouzi, Torreira, these guys do have, you know, big positives. But when it comes down to it, it's 50-50 whether or not they're actually going to win their duels. So when it comes to us dominating matches and being able to have sustained periods of pressure, I think part of the reason we're not able to do that is the fact that we actually just lose our battles and we allow teams to get into the ascendancy very, very quickly and very, very easily. I think we're probably one of the worst teams in the league when we go 1-0 up, because the other teams, they get motivated when they go 1-0 down, and we can't stop them from gaining that ascendancy because we don't win battles. I think once teams up their level physically or up the intensity, maybe 4-5%, we crumble, you know? And that's something that I think the midfield profile is very, very important to stop in. So, Lira, I'll let you get in on this before we finish on the attack. Like, is there anything that you want to add onto what anyone said so far?
So I pretty much agree with all the boys said. The only thing I'll say is, my thing is, what I'm looking for in our side, and I think what Liverpool have shown, is I'm looking for dominance. Especially if you're playing a two in there, I want a midfield two that other teams are going to line up in the tunnel and look, oh my God, this is going to be a bad day. Just because they're just, you can't look how you're going to beat them. So if physically you're not going to beat them, technically you're not going to beat them. And I feel like with Partey, we have a player who can be that player. Bissouma, I think, I could imagine Partey and Bissouma. Imagine that midfield at the base. It's literally, thou shalt not pass. You have to be exceptional today to really pass us to. And that whole feeling, when I actually think about it, I smile. I'm thinking, man, imagine that two in midfield. Not like you're going to have to be very good that day to beat us. Do you know what I mean? And that's the kind of feeling you want in your midfield. Because I'm looking at Neves now, and I'm thinking, yeah, he's a target. It's like, you can see Big Sam when he gets his new relegated club saying, see that Neves, like, let's get at him, let's get at him today. Same with Xhaka, same rubbish. You're not going to do that at Bissouma. See that Bissouma. Bob, he'll eat you alive. He'll take your shins. It's not happening. So that's what I want from my midfield. Dominance. And I see, even though I'm not keen on the price, I'm hearing like 40 mil.
Pay it, bro.
You know what? I'm the German Dan. Like, I see him in there in his Instagram with the martinis. I know he's buying like 20 pound martinis and that. So I know German Dan don't care about no money. He's like a rich man. So yeah, I'm moving like that. Just pay the money to get done because I feel like he might be the right there.
And do you know the thing, like you guys have touched about, you know, how it was before and, you know, in terms of dominance, you know, and it does come across like a bit yerder in terms of, yeah, win your jewels. But I think people really underplay like that psychological factor as well. Do you know what I mean? You know, whenever you hear people talk about the Invincibles, they said they were shook. They said the Invincible, Patrick Vieira always used to say, like, said we went out knowing that games are won before we even played them. Do you know what I mean? Just because they said teams were shook, like, of him and Gilberto in midfield. They just knew, like, physically, he said, if you wanted to get into it, like, we would win our draws against you. And then we would start playing football and we would be better at, you know, at football as well. So, you know, that comes back to that fact of, you know, having multi-layered midfielders who can, you know, do it on whatever day it calls. Because that point Dan made really stuck with me, you know. You know, Arsenal have, like, a 20-minute period in game where you think, oh, this looks really, really, really good. But then, you know, game state can change, you know. Like, you know, England is so crazy, like, and especially with crowds coming back, you'll see it again. Like, you know, a team gets a throw-in and all of a sudden the momentum of the game can just shift as well. Like, do you know what I mean? So that's why it's very important just to have guys who can stand up to any sort of situation or threat that they're posed by. And so yeah, that's why I'm also with you guys as well. For me, I've said already, Bissouma would be my number one signing in the summer. So, yeah.
And I think you make a very good point on the psychological thing, because look at Liverpool. They stepped on the pitch knowing they would dominate teams physically and play their football. Even City, their football is so good that they have a lot of athletes as well. Fernandinho is stamping his authority in their midfield. So it's like we need that on a smaller scale in order to move up again. We really need that. And I can't stress how much I think that Bissouma and Partey in the Premier League, that's a midfield that they're running man ragged, man. People would not want to play after a while, man. They're just, you know, why would you want to play when these men are just running you down? Like, you wouldn't want to.
When they're clamping you, you try and clamp them back, and they're dribbling and slapping your head on the way past. You know, you just have to sit in your deep block and chill there. You know, so I think that the technical and physical dominance that a midfield pair like that can offer you, you know, you can't really sniff at it. And it's just funny to me that this Bissouma guy is basically, you know, sending out "come get me, please" every other week, every Instagram post, and the club is asleep. So, you know, they're telling me that they want a Ceballos type, you know, on a TL. Oh, yeah, that's just. But I'm disgusted. But
Bissouma dressing in all red with a handbag, and Arsenal are not buying him. This is crazy, man. Yeah, handbag red, shoes red, car red. This guy's. You know, but I hope we still get him.
Yeah, same. I really do. So final area of the pitch, the attack. So I'm including a number 10 in this as well, because I think, you know, this is probably the area that we might see the least movement this summer. I don't think I'm seeing too many links to forwards. It's mainly links to, I guess, number 10s. And there's a few cursory ones to a striker. So I guess starting with the wide options, do you think with the, you know, exit of Willian that we're actually set in terms of wide options, or would you bring an extra one in? German Dan, I'll start with you.
This is a good question. And for me, I think ESR and Saka are mustard. Like, Saka for me, right wing, they are, even left wing at times, they are. And I think Pepe should get more minutes next season. But for me, ESR and Saka have to play. We have one game a week, most weeks, them two have to play. So I'm thinking, where would they play? Ideally, Saka right wing. Yeah, for me. So ideally, ESR in the 10. So I'm looking at the position left wing, a position where we could potentially recruit. And I know Shane and Leroy don't like ESR as much on the left, but I don't actually mind ESR on the left as well. I think he's quite good on the left, and I like the way he like combines with people and brings people in the play on the left, and Tierney behind him, and he always comes inside and he can just roam, and Tierney owns that flank anyway. I wouldn't mind ESR on the left as well. So for me, I'm looking at a central player or a left winger. So boy, I think we just need someone with high technical skills. High technical skills, good physical base. I'm not crazy about the physical in that aspect. I'm looking at a player that I think is robust enough to hold off a couple challenges and resist challenges as well and get away from his marker. And a player that can bring others into play, good regularity, play off both feet. You guys know I love Udogie, but I'm looking at it more of a space of like we need to get someone in and then be able to still make our other moves. So we said Bissouma's essential for all of us. So we need to have the money to still get Bissouma and the right bag. And so I'm looking at an option that where I feel like this is a good value for money. And this is why I was against Buendia, even though I was watching him a bit more thinking, yeah, this guy's actually quite good. This guy's a good player. I was like, 30 mil is too much. 40 mil too much. I'm looking at a player where I feel like, yeah, this is a good player, 20, 25 million. He should probably be 35, really, when he plays well. And the player for me is Julian Brandt. I think that's the player I would get. Versatile again. So that would allow ESL to some games play 10, some games play left. Saka to sometimes sit out. Pepe to sometimes sit out. Because he can play all across that, you know, that front three, you'd say. So Brandt would be my choice. I mean, we all want more toys to play with sort of thing. But I think that would be my main choice as an attacking sort of forwards that I'd like us to recruit.
Yeah, fair. Leroy, yeah, go ahead, Leroy, go ahead.
In the wide positions, don't get me wrong, I'm in a similar boat to German Dan in that I really like our young players and I think we should lean into them and make sure they have sufficient minutes. But with Willian gone, what are our wide options? We've got Pepe. We've got less said the better. We've got ESR potentially. We've got Saka. Then we've got hopefully Lacazette leaves, so I'm not counting Aubameyang as a wide option. And we've got Martinelli. For me, that feels short on both quality and that feels short on number. Because I mentioned ESR, but he's gonna be the 10. And we've not, even if we get another 10, it just feels short to me. And it feels short of profiles as well. So I would ideally like to add someone who is a 1v1 specialist who really dribbles and gets at people. Because I feel like we don't really have that in the team. So Saka can dribble a bit. Pepe is Pepe. ESR doesn't really do it. So I feel like I would like that kind of profile on a team. Because I feel like, especially if you're a team that has a lot of the ball, that's a very important characteristic to have in your squad. I'm not sure that Nelson is really going to get a look in. I'm not sure if we're going to sell him or loan him. I imagine it'd be one of those two. I don't think he's going to get a look in next season. So I would be looking to recruit in the wide positions personally. That's my 2 cents.
Yeah, fair.
Is it a player that you're looking at, Leroy, that you find interesting? Sorry.
Well, I would like to bring up a debate I had with a certain SV Carboholic.
What debate do we have?
when we were looking in France at Nicolas Pepe, I said Nicolas Pepe, mm-hmm. I mentioned a player mm-hmm. to him. I actually brought up.
Yeah. I said, yo, Shayon,
what do you think of this Alan Saint-Maximin, brother? Because I think he's going for relatively cheap, but even though I feel like he doesn't have that much end product in the final third, I think he'll be a menace. I think he'll challenge us, attack, move 1v1, and I think he'll be useful for the squad. This man tells me, like he looked at someone ugly. This guy's ugly. This guy's ugly. Nah, man.
I didn't even say that, so stop.
You had lots of eyes for Pepe at the time, man. That's all you can see. So I would like someone of that profile. So St. Maximin's going to cost an arm and a leg now because of the Prem tax, so maybe that's not good. I don't really watch enough European ball to see someone with who's got them kind of numbers, but someone in that mould. Now, if we could get if we could get St. Maximin for Willock and a bit of change, I would do it. I would do it. I would do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Put my hands up. When I had this discussion with Leroy, this was like over 2 years ago now, probably like 2.5 years ago, and I wasn't.
The time does not matter.
So I was a bit down on Saint Maximum just because I was looking at end product at the time. So Saint Maximum was probably the biggest dribble machine in France at the time, outside of Neymar, probably. So yeah, like the numbers he stacked up were very, very high, but it just never translated into end product. So my thing at the time was that, you know, Pepe's dribble numbers weren't as high as Saint Maximum's, but they were still good. I think like Saint Maximum was in about 5 dribbles per game. Pepe was in about 3, but Pepe also had the end product, which naturally was more what swayed me to him. Do you know what I mean? So he just seemed a bit more, you know, decisive. However, what I will admit, you know, upon coming to the Premier League is that Saint Maximum is a lot more destructive, I think, than Pepe is. Do you know what I mean? So in terms of, yeah, he's a lot more direct than Pepe is. But again, at the same time, I still think Pepe is more decisive in the final third. You know what I mean? In front of goal, I would trust Pepe to bag more. So it's an interesting dynamic. And I think I sort of agree with both of you in terms of, I feel like we do need a 1v1 demon. But at the same time, I am also very, very big on Julian Brandt as well. Especially, I think like 25 mil, I think is such good value for Julian Brandt if we could get it as well. Like when I tweeted the other day, like so many Arsenal fans were down on him. They're like, no, he's crap. Like he can't get into the Dortmund team. He's crap. Like this, that, and the other. Like, and I'm like, you know, sometimes I feel like people jump onto players just because they're having a bad spell. Do you know what I mean? So I saw Brandt at Leverkusen. I thought he was fantastic. Even his first season at Dortmund, I thought he was really, really good. Sometimes players just have need a new environment to thrive as well. And I feel like that's more the case with Brandt than anything, you know, ability related. You know, people sometimes spoken about mental, but one of the things I like about Brandt, as Dan alluded to, is the versatility. You know, he could, you know, Brandt started his career as a winger, didn't he? So, you know, he's very comfortable wide. And he's one of those, like, you know, when you talk about like Brandt, ESR, those are guys that have a burst over a 20, 30 yard. They're not like, you know, top speed merchants, but they are able to create separation in like a 20, 30 yard burst as well. So I would quite like him. And yeah, I do agree. I do prefer ESR in the 10 as well. But, you know, I also, it's not that I don't have a problem with ESR on the left, like, because at the same time, like Nasri, Arshavin, these were all guys that prefer to play in the middle as well. But we had no problem playing them wide as well. So I don't really have a problem playing ESR wide, but I do think we do need an uplift in technical quality as well. So, and you know, with a base like Bissouma and Partey, I think it just allows us flexibility to do whatever we want in the front four, whether we want to have an extra creator or whether we want to have a 1v1 demon, knowing that, you know, we're more compact and there's better protection behind them. So I'm not fussed either way. I think both Dan and Leroy shouts are good. I'm not even sure which one I'm sitting on at the moment. If we had Europe, I would say buy them both. But maybe St. Maximum is a decent shout as well, because that's another guy who's, you know, shown he can do it in this league, and who has that level of athleticism. It's another Arsenal supporter again, so I'm not fussed either way. I feel like, yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to be a 10. It can be like a wide forward. So, I'm not sure. If we got Brandt or St. Maximum either way, I think I'd be happy, because I think they both add qualities in their different ways.
Yeah, some really good points there. I guess moving on to, let's talk number 10, right? For me, in this position, thinking about how we might potentially want to play, if we're going with the number 10 and out 10, I would like a number 10 that brings goals or high volume of assists, right? A lot of chances created. I think that our goal output, our numbers up needs to go up drastically. I don't think we have enough creativity in the team. Someone like Odegaard being top of the list, I think makes sense from an Arsenal perspective, that this guy is probably seen like an Ozil type, in the sense that he's a chance creation machine, makes lots of chances for teammates, clear-cut chances, and he's almost like an advanced playmaker, in the sense that he's way more than just a final ball. He sort of orchestrates where attackers need to stand, where people need to run. You know, he makes things happen. I think that West Ham game is probably the best one that he played in an Arsenal shirt. And I think he didn't get a single assist in that game. But the goal-scoring potential of the team was very high when he was on Song, basically. I probably was alone in being big up on Emi Buendia as well, in the sense that I think that he did. He was a big chance creation machine as well, as far as I'm concerned. I think he probably isn't as clean as someone like Odegaard. But, you know, he's great on the dribble, two-footed. I think he's quite similar to ESR in the sense that, you know, he drifts off to the wide spaces, likes to combine with people, play one-twos around the corner and drive into the box as well. So a big on him. And then I guess another one that Dan mentioned, Julian Brandt, I think he's more like a halfway house between the two, if that makes sense. I think he's got a quality final ball. His technique is, you know, A1. I think I can't remember what tournament it was where he came off the bench, I think, for Germany, and he hit one rasping shot just past the post when Germany went. I think it was probably the last World Cup when Germany went out in the group stages. No, sorry, Dan, but I think it was one of those matches. Germany needed a goal, and I saw this guy off the bench. He hit one crazy shot, and I was like, wow, who was that? Because the technique was nuts. But I don't think he's a pop chance creation machine. I think he is maybe in that ESR mold as well, that he likes to combine with players, make those third man runs, if that makes sense. And his final ball is quite good as well. So, you know, I think there are different types that we can get. But what I want from a number 10 is someone to increase that goal potential, of the team. So, Lira, I'll come to you on this one. Who, like, I know you're very high on Odegaard, but are you still high on him enough to go and spend, I guess, £50 million on him? And if not, who would be your next choice?
Yes, in a nutshell, I'm still going to spend the money. I think Odegaard is age. I feel that we didn't even see the best of him. I don't think we scratched the surface of what he can actually bring to the team. So, like, obviously, people are taking in a lot. Like, moving to the Prem, especially when you're young, isn't easy. And moving to the Prem when you've only really played in such lower intensity leagues like Spain and Holland, is not easy. Now, particularly before his injury, he showed us what he's capable of. And I proper think we can get that out of him consistently, provided that we give him the right kind of environment, the right kind of love and attention, make him feel important, etc. After his injury, he was a little bit shaky, granted. But I really think he's a guy who can do amazing things for us. So I would spend that money, and I think he's worth it. If we couldn't get him, because it might be difficult to actually pry him out of Madrid, someone of that level of talent, I'm not really sure who else. I mean, I do like Julian Brandt. I have a little bit of worry because when Bayern say someone ain't right mentally, they're usually right. So those are rumours that were floating around. But I do like Julian Brandt in terms of his skill set and his ability. That's the type of person, especially at the price quoted. I think that's very good value. I like his ability, but he's very sometime-ish for me in terms of when he decides to turn up and when he doesn't. So that would be a concern, particularly if we've not got that level of talent that we can just bench him anyway. Who else is there really to go at 10? I don't really think there's many options. I mean, if Fekir had a knee, I would be with it, but I'm not sure what his injury situation is like. And at his age, I'm not really feeling it, but at a cut price still, I would do it as well. But there's not really many other options that I would really take. If we couldn't get that, then I would get someone who was like a left winger who could deputise as a 10. That would be my next option. But yeah, it's not an easy position to recruit in, really, especially for Arsenal with not unlimited money.
Fair play. Sean and Dan,
how old is Fekir now?
27.
I have to look into his number.
Check. He is, he's, yeah, 27. He's going to be 20. Yeah, he's going to turn 28 now. Avoid like next month.
Okay. And he's going to the Liga this year as well.
But do you know what the funny thing is, actually? I think someone posted it as well. Like, since that Feld moved to Liverpool, he has played like, so he's been at Betis for two seasons. In the two seasons, he's played 33 games and 38 games. So he's not really been injured, to be fair to him. So, like, yeah. So it may, maybe. But, yeah, he won't be on my list. I can't lie. I still sort of side with Dan. Julian Brandt would be who I would target just because I think he can. I think he actually has the potential to contribute goals as well, Brant. So he's got a fantastic shot off the left or right foot as well. Good final ball. So I just feel like, yeah, I feel like he's one of those guys who just needs a move to reinvigorate himself as well. So yeah, that would be my shot.
Yeah.
Fair play. And finally, striker, right? So we've got Aubameyang on 375k a week, doing fofty with his brother every Instagram story. His brother firing shots into the air, firing shots into his ceiling. You know, this guy, I don't know what sort of state we're gonna get him back when he's not, you know, pummeling.
His brother's definitely on drugs or something, innit? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, when he's not doing that, jeweled up and that, he's playing five a side with the local French lads and packing in some top bins. So I don't really know what sort of mentality this guy's going to come back with in summer. Next up, we got Lacazette. There's speculation as to whether he wants to try Pastor's new Eduardo Hagen dropping exclusives about his future, you know. Then we've got Martinelli and Balogun, who are both now on long-term contracts as well as potential backup. So, Sean, starting with you, what would you do in the striker situation? And what do you think Arteta wants to do in the striker situation as well?
So what I would do is, I would clear out Eddie and Lacar, and obviously it's a bit risky, but again, like I said, we're only playing one game a week next season. So, and touchwood, Aubameyang has never really been someone who gets injured. So I could realistically see him playing like at least like 30 out of the 38 league games, assuming he's fit. So, with that, you have to then wonder what's the plan? What would you do? So I wouldn't change too much. What I think Arteta might be thinking, and what frustrates me about this, is that I feel like Arteta wants a nine with a back-to-goal game who brings other people in, who can link and combine. And that's fine. I've actually got no issue with that. But my main issue is that if you knew that's always what you wanted, why would you then give Aubameyang the new contract? Because now you have to make it work with Aubameyang. So you have to play to his strengths. But it seems like there's a bit of conflict. There's a bit of friction there as well. So I feel like there's a situation that might develop there over the course of the next season, because, you know, Arteta wants his strikers to be involved to, you know, and we know obviously Aubameyang is quite a low touch forward who, you know, wants to be surrounded by high volume creators who can, you know, slide him through balls. So that's why I think he kind of likes Odegaard, you know what I mean? He's got a good relationship with him. So it's a weird one, because obviously we're bound by Aubameyang's contract. And I'm fine by that. For me, I've always maintained, I don't think Aubameyang's dropped off physically at all. I don't think there's been any difference. I just think the main difference is that we've not got the ball in the box enough, basically. So we need to find out a way to, you know, just be more creative, have more combinations in and around the box that, you know, that we can feed him, because I think he'll still, like, assuming we create chances for him, I can still see him scoring 25 goals a season. But that's obviously the debate. And then obviously it's a tough one now, because obviously you've got Martinelli and Balogun. I think Martinelli will get games on the left next season. I think Arteta will give him games on the left. Balogun, I'm not so sure. Obviously Chris Wheatley has said that, you know, he's going to be part of the first team squad, but it's a question, because, you know, I come back to my point about I believe young players should always play. So then you're going to wonder how many games he's going to play next season. And obviously, I take Dan, your point earlier. You said earlier today you think he should go on loan. So I do get the credence in that. But it's hard, because, you know, then do you pay for a striker who's just going to sit and be back up to Aubameyang again? So that one is, yeah, there's a few things up in the air. I don't think we'll sign a striker, if I'm to be totally honest. I don't think we'll sign a striker at all. But I think that's one which is developing. Things are going to change around that one. Like I said, I've personally got a lot of faith in Balogun, but I just don't know if he's going to get enough game time to develop this season.
Fair play. Dan, Leroy, anything that you want to add to what Sean said about the striker situation?
Striker, I can proper see that we might sign a striker and Aubameyang just playing the left wing again. I wouldn't be surprised. That's all I've got to say on this one. But no, I do think Balogun, I also don't think they're viewing Martinelli as a striker just yet. I think he will continue to play on the wing next season, left wing probably. So I do think they will look at trying to get a striker if Lacazette goes. So for the reasons of Aubameyang could play on the left, and it's probably something that he still considers as a feasible and good option. And Lacazette is going to go. Martinelli doesn't really view as a striker right now, I think. They might try to prop him up to it, but I can see us having some movement in this position. And I think the links we've had, what are the links that we've had? That guy at Celtic, he's gone to Leicester now. Dembele from Atletico Madrid, I don't think that was a credible link, but no thank you. And then the last one was Alexander Isak. Again, I think it's not really a player that plays that well with his back to go either. It's also someone that kind of goes into the channels. I think he's a better footballer than Aubameyang, but he's not your super, you know. Mariah's trying to ambush this pod. Yo, Fekir would be better than Bruno Fernandes for your forwards, man. I'll tell you that much.
That's smoky talk. Hey, cut that out, because you know the Ox will reload that. Like, if we sign him, they're going to be doing it.
I'm down to see you.
Yeah, they're going to clip that. They're going to clip that one, Dan.
Mariah, I am stressed. I am stressed.
It's a striker definitely is a funny one for me, you know, because I feel like we've not actually tried to lean into Aubameyang striker at all, you know. I feel like we've not tried to get the best out of him. And we're not really, you know, sort of, I think the manager's not really shown trust that he has trust in Aubameyang to play play number nine, you know. So I think it's definitely one to watch. I think ultimately I would let Lacazette go, and then bring in a forward, right? Not necessarily a striker, not necessarily a winger, someone who can play across the front three, who can potentially deputise to Aubameyang, play alongside Aubameyang, and play on the left and play on the right. It's very funny, because I know some of what Leroy was saying earlier about a 1v1 demon. And I think that's a big overlap with someone like Wilfried Zaha. Like, I'm not saying go out and get Zaha, because for me, I think that ship sailed. He's 29 years old now. He's probably still going to cost a bit of money to get him out of Crystal Palace, because he's on that death row contract. And he's on big wages as well. I think he's on 120k per week. So you're going to have to be giving him 100 and 150. Although, given how much of a fan he is of the club, I could probably see him taking a pay cut to join. But Zaha on a three-year deal, I feel like we could do a lot worse. But again, I feel like it's one of them ones where the ship has probably sailed. And then if you're looking at someone like a Doku, a Moussa Diaby or something like that, I definitely would be a lot more excited about a link like that, where I feel like they can play anywhere in the attack. So it's definitely something that I think we need to monitor. And I personally just hope that Lacazette goes, because enough is enough, really.
Good luck. Call me crazy, I'm doing Zaha, man. I'm doing Zaha.
Yeah.
Just for I'm gonna
do it. Do you know obviously another thing you have to bear in mind here? Signing Zaha, that's another AFCON player again. So all of a sudden you just start stacking up. So you
they're cancelling that. Don't worry.
No, you might be talking about make Arsenal black again. Just don't have a consequence.
Yeah, we're talking about no players in the Euros. That's because they're all in AFCON, innit? Don't worry, that's calm. I'm gonna leave it. I'm gonna leave it there for today. Thanks everyone for listening. If you're still listening, make sure you drop a like and a comment on that video. Thanks for everyone that's been asking questions, dropping comments. Not you, Mariah. You can do one. You see that energy. There, we'll be back next season. Make sure you subscribe to the Patreon. So we're going to be doing lots of individual player profiles. So I think we're not going to do it for every single link, but the strong ones. So Ruben Neves, they've been talking about. Bissouma, they've been talking about. Heavy. So if we get a strong right-back link, I'm sure we're probably going to look at that as well. Maybe we'll do Onana. So if you guys do want to know a bit more about some of these players that we're linked with, then make sure you subscribe to the Patreon. There's going to be lots of Patreon content out this summer. So, yeah, thanks everyone for listening, and stay blessed.
Bless.
Peace.
In a bit.
It's got to two. We've still got more than half an hour to go, and here's Ozil. Lacazette. Ozil!
Yo! Could it went left, but it went right. Could it went wrong, but it went right. Said it was Ian, but it went right. Now we get bars on bars on site. MVP in the night. Get a negative to positive.
We're heading for a classic in the paper. Final.
Man could have had that fight, but I'm in walk on side. Man had to grab that mind. You're not gonna spit this time. Trying to work with a good energy. Man gonna work with a bad man vibe. None of these guys can't do it like
that. It's Aaron Ramsey.
That's foul.
That's the response of Arsenal.
Man crossed the line. Scored for my team in the time I played. Where better know when man's
inside. Chelsea.
Man can't say I get
simply
floor, but you can ask
lost their focus in the joy of equalising.
Sports Social Podcast Network.